The Road to Malta by X. Jane, read by Cookie Mom 6067. Chapter 1. They've been trudging through the desert for Allah knows how long. The landscape never varies. Sand, rocks, endless emptiness as far as the eye can see. Yusuf's clothes hang off him in bloodied, ragged tatters. His curls and beard are crusted with filth. His skin caked with all sorts of dust and dirt. Their origins don't bear thinking about. They ran out of water days ago. Yusuf's water skin was lost somewhere on the battlefield outside of Al-Quds, and the invaders had been at best half full when they set off on this crazy journey. To his credit, Yusuf's pale blue-eyed companion had offered him some drops too, when he'd fallen down exhausted and parched by some rocks only a few hours into their trek. Ever since, they've been suffering, muddling through. Ever so often, one of them dies from hunger or thirst or fatigue, and the other is forced to sit down under the blistering sun and wait, only to have the situation reversed a short time later. They have no clear destination in mind, but they are heading due west. Yusuf has been navigating as best he could. He keeps track of the sun and uses the stars at night to correct when they wandered off course. Those first days they walked aimlessly, hiding from raiding parties and bandits, roaming around Al-Quds. But they soon realized they needed a plan, hence their trek through the desert. They must find a village or an oasis at some point, and even if not, they are bound to reach the coast eventually. Then they can easily find Jaffa or Ascalon and set sail for home. It won't be a moment too soon, either. Yusuf will be glad to see this cursed Christian leave and never return, and then maybe this strange affliction that has befallen them will be lifted too, and Yusuf can go back to his family. His poor mother will likely have heard of the battle which decimated all of Al-Quds, and she will have mourned for her only son. His father will have listened to her laments, pulling his beard, guilt plaguing him for having sent Yusuf on such a long and perilous trip to obtain expensive wares for them to sell. His sisters will have had to find suitable matches without the fat dowries the merchandise Yusuf was supposed to bring back would have secured them. Still, he tells himself when he hears the telltale arduous breaths that signal Nicolo's imminent death, they will be glad to have him return to them, even penniless. They will. Behind him, Nicolo falls down in the sand. Yusuf sighs. He couldn't have hung on for another hour or so until the sun would have set, so Yusuf could have had a few minutes' respite in the coolness of the twilight hour. Then again, Yusuf had died when the sun was at its highest today, and Nicolo hadn't complained about having to wait in the sweltering heat. At least there are a few tallish rocks not too far away. Yusuf will be able to curl up small in their shade and still keep an eye on Nicolo. The poor man's skin is covered with burns, even though he's ripped his tunic, with the offending cross, into some sort of makeshift turban. Yusuf is not sure what day it is. Still Ramadan, he supposes. He grimaces. He's fasting, all right. If things were different, he'd be in his father's house, where the women would be preparing for Eid. His stomach cramps painfully at the thought of tables bending under the weight of all the food. He should pray, maybe. But he's too tired. Too unsure about the direction of Mecca. Too dirty. It shouldn't be an excuse, Yusuf knows that. He can use the sand to clean himself. He can pray in all four directions. Allah doesn't want to make it hard on those who believe, the Quran says. But if that is the truth, then why did Allah send the invaders? Why did he not strike all of them down in front of Al-Quds? Why did he curse Yusuf with this infernal undying? Why did he burden Yusuf with an infidel Frank as his only companion? He glances over. Nicolo should wake up soon. The first few times this happened, he thought about getting up and leaving the pale invader behind. What does he owe him? But then he thinks about their truce. The bloody handshake after a day and a night of killing and dying and killing and dying. They are strange allies, the two of them, but allies nevertheless, for now. They haven't talked a lot, Nicolo and he. There were the taunts and yells on the battlefield during their first fight, and the dozens that came after that. And after they set out on their journey, there have been a few words here and there, a handful of hesitant conversations when they rest for a few hours in the evening, trying to get some precious sleep before it gets too cold to remain seated, or right before dawn and another day of oppressive heat. Yusuf talks more than Niccolo, but Niccolo doesn't seem to mind. He says he likes to listen. Says he's used to keeping quiet from the monastery. Yusuf cannot imagine spending day after day in silence, but Niccolo merely shrugged when Yusuf tried to ask about it. It's strangely peaceful to sit, starving, parched, and exhausted, covered in the remains of each other's blood and guts, the broadsword that crushed Yusuf's skull discarded right next to the scimitar he used to cut Niccolo's arm at the elbow, and talk about normal things, such as how Niccolo used to fish for his family's dinner on Friday mornings before school, or how Yusuf got so caught up in making a doll for his youngest sister one day that he forgot school altogether. They have to speak slowly, in halting Greek neither of them is overly comfortable in. Still, they are all they have at this very moment. So when Niccolo groans weakly, Yusuf slowly gets up and reaches a hand out to him. Niccolo grasps it with the feeble force he has in his fingers, and they both stumble for a moment as he uses it as leverage to stand. "Everything okay?" Yusuf mumbles, and Niccolo nods. "Let's go on," he murmurs back. Neither of them speaks after that. There is no need to. They both know it. Their deaths are coming faster, their bodies weaker every time they wake up. They thought they could make it, dying and waking and walking and dying again. But what if they don't? What if their number of deaths is limited? What if at some point they won't be able to take more than a few steps before falling again? How long do they have? How much further to rescue? Yusuf tries not to despair. Tries not to see the exhaustion on Niccolo's face, the dwindling hope in his eyes. They speak no more until the next morning's sunrise. The sky bleeds from red to sienna to orange, and Niccolo stands for a moment, swaying like a leaf in the breeze. "The night is always darkest just before dawn," he says, and Yusuf stops next to him. They lean precariously against each other, and at the first rays of golden light, they fall into step at each other's side as if they've done so for 1,000 years. By some divine stroke of luck, they stumble onto an abandoned outpost. It's nothing to write home about. A handful of tiny buildings and some painstakingly tended patches of vegetable gardens in the shade of a few date palms. There's no living soul to be seen. And Yusuf says a quick prayer. He hopes the families who lived here took their animals and belongings and fled for the rumors of war before the invaders pass by. He notices Niccolo touching the heavy wooden cross around his neck. Could he be thinking along the same lines as Yusuf? All thoughts and prayers for the people who tried to eke out a living here disperse fast, though, when Niccolo spots the well. All tiredness seems to leave his bones, as he almost trips over himself in his haste. "Yusuf," he calls out before he's even hauled up the first bucketful. "Yusuf, water, water." They spill more water than Yusuf cares to think about, greedily scooping it up with both hands to take that first gulp. Yusuf doesn't even stop to pause about how dirty his fingers are when he feels the water dripping through them as he drinks. But then he stops Niccolo, who's about to plunge his hands in again for a second mouthful. "Wait," he says. "Wash first and drink slowly. You'll get sick if you overdo it." Niccolo grimaces and rolls his eyes. "Dying of sickness might be a welcome relief," he mutters in a low voice. But he takes up Yusuf's example and submerges his hands in the bucket, rubbing them together in an attempt to get the worst grime off. Yusuf hauls up another load after that, clear and cool, and they take turns slaking their thirst. And then they slowly become aware of all the other things ailing them, hunger and sunburn and utter fatigue. There's a tent set up next to one of the more stable dwellings. Maybe it belonged to someone who hadn't yet managed to build a sturdier home. He looks at it, assessing, and then to Niccolo, who's following his gaze. "It would be stealing," Niccolo says hesitantly, and Yusuf scoffs. "That's where you draw the line. You're fine with robbing a whole country from its inhabitants, killing dozens of men whose only crime is to defend their town and their families, burning and pillaging as you go, murdering women and children, but you will not take some abandoned clothes or blankets?" Niccolo doesn't reply. Yusuf laughs, mirthlessly. "Don't worry, Frank," he says, surprised by his cruelty. "I'll save your doomed soul." Without waiting for an answer, he opens the tent flap and steps in. It is clear whoever was here last left in a hurry. There are no bedrolls anywhere, and only one blanket as far as Yusuf can see. But some clean clothes lie haphazardly in a corner, and there's some soap near the far end. He takes those out. They can worry about food and warmth later. "Here." He shows his loot to Niccolo, who wordlessly hauls up more water while Yusuf divides the clothes into two piles. The idea of finally feeling clean again is a powerful motivator, and before long they're both doffing the remains of what once were clothes. Belatedly, they turn their backs toward each other and awkwardly hand the soap back and forth between them. Niccolo dumps a whole bucket of water over his head, making the ground muddy. Yusuf hauls up another bucket to rinse off, too. He winces when he notices how dark the water by their feet is. Dust and sand and blood, and who knows what, drips off them in steady rivulets. And it takes many bucketfuls before they're done. By that time, the sun is setting, and Yusuf suddenly shivers in the cool evening air. Almost simultaneously, he and Niccolo grab their new, dry clothes. Yusuf steps away from their improvised bathroom and turns back to face Niccolo, who's still standing by the well. He has soaped up his face again, Yusuf sees, and then he rummages through his possessions to emerge with a dagger in his large hand. "What are you?" Yusuf begins, but then interrupts himself when he sees Niccolo carefully putting the sharp edge to his cheeks, to the straggly beard growing there. "Careful," he warns, just as Niccolo flinches back and a red drop appears just above where the soap has been removed by the blade. "Here, let me." "It's okay," Niccolo mumbles, holding onto the hilt of his knife. "It'll heal. It's not..." "Are you afraid I will cut your throat?" Yusuf returns, challenging. Niccolo just turns to look at him, his piercing blue eyes so much clearer, now his face is not covered with dirt streaks. "I just wake up again," he says slowly. "As a punishment for my sins, I'm sure," Yusuf mutters back, but he swallows further remarks when Niccolo hands him the dagger hilt first. It's a show of trust, much like the first time they grabbed each other's hand on the bloody battlefield under the walls of Al-Quds. Yusuf takes it for what it is, and carefully shaves Niccolo's cheeks, cautious not to cause any more nicks. It feels oddly intimate to be so close after all this time. They have been at blade's length before, but never as not enemies. Friend feels too big a word, too easy after all the blood spilled, and yet here they are. Niccolo baring his neck without hesitation, tilting his head to give Yusuf easy access. Yusuf smells the soap on Niccolo's skin, feels Niccolo's hair tickle on the back of his hand. He grits his teeth. Niccolo is a travel companion, a confidant in this strange secret they keep, but nothing more. Even if they both shiver when Yusuf's fingers brush over Niccolo's jaw as he glides the dagger over the thin skin of Niccolo's throat. Niccolo's nose seems even bigger when Yusuf's done, and there's a mole on his chin Yusuf couldn't see earlier. It's strange, he thinks, to know these details about one of the Christians, to know all the different colors in his eyes, the softness of his skin. It's strange to think he would have killed this man, did kill this man, without a second thought, without sparing a moment to ponder that his enemy must have had dreams and hopes for his life, and people who would mourn him, just like Yusuf. He shakes his head at that. It was not Yusuf who traveled for long, grueling months to wage war on Niccolo's brethren. It cannot be on Yusuf's soul to have killed Niccolo and several of his countrymen. It must be the hunger, which makes him hallucinate and conjures pity for the invader where none is deserved. There, he says brusquely, all done. Thank you, Niccolo says quietly but sincerely, his eyes on the ground. Yusuf feels chastised for his thoughts. Maybe one day they will talk about why Niccolo felt the need to pick up the sword, but not today. Today they extend the truths they formed in Al-Quds. Come on, he says, changing the subject. We need to sleep. We should be safe enough for now, I think. Niccolo seems like he wants to say something, but he thinks better of it. Together they get into the tent and roll themselves into their new clothes to ward off the nighttime chill. For the first time since he spied the invading army from the walls of Al-Quds, Yusuf sleeps like a newborn. He wakes up hours later when he hears rustling. Niccolo is nowhere to be seen, but through the open tent flaps, Yusuf can see the stars are still high in the sky. Well, if that idiot of a Frank wants to leave right now, then so be it. He won't make it far before he's back to where he was yesterday, starving and lost in the desert. Speaking of starving, however, Yusuf's stomach chooses that precise moment to rumble loudly. He should probably see if there's anything left to eat anywhere. The tent flap moves and Niccolo steps back in, his hands full with a few odd parcels. Oh, Niccolo says, surprised. Apologies for waking you. He holds out his hands, and Yusuf makes out a few dried dates and some cheese that doesn't look too horrible. I figured you might be hungry when you woke, so I looked around for some food. Yusuf's first thought is that Niccolo clearly meant to eat alone, but then he discards it just as fast. If that was Niccolo's plan, he didn't need to bring his loot back here. Still, he feels prickly and not at all charitable when he replies tersely, I thought you didn't want to steal. Niccolo's eyes darken with something Yusuf doesn't want to explore. Hurt? Silently, Niccolo divides the dates and breaks the cheese in two. He hands the bigger part to Yusuf, and Yusuf mumbles a half-assed thank you as he ravenously starts eating, smacking his lips. It's not a lot, and it doesn't take long before it's all gone. They sit for a moment next to each other. It's cold, and Yusuf spreads the thin blanket he saw earlier over both their laps. It means they have to sit very closely to each other, but neither comments on it. Then Niccolo starts to speak, choosing his words carefully. I am sorry, he says, for coming here to... He pauses, swallows, steels himself against something Yusuf can't decipher. What you said earlier, steal your country, kill innocent men. You are right, I have committed sins which God will not forgive, even though... He hesitates. Even though I was taught they were done in his name and to his glory. He touches his cross again briefly where it lies against his pale throat, and Yusuf is fascinated by the unconscious gesture. His contrition is real, Yusuf can tell. He thinks about what the men said on the morning of the battle, how Allah would reward any martyrs handsomely. He thinks about how the Christian inhabitants of Al-Quds were driven out of town with only the clothes on their backs, and he thinks about what the prophet said about Isa and the people who follow him, that they are good and deserving of rewards from their Lord. There has been so much death that nothing will grow on the Al-Quds soil for years to come, Yusuf thinks. And for what? My sins were too big for even God to wash off me. Jesus' sacrifice at the cross couldn't deliver me from them. Maybe that is why he denied me entry into heaven, Niccolo says into the silence between them, almost more to himself than to Yusuf. There has been sin, certainly. There is blood on Niccolo's hands. But has he sinned more than all the other fallen men? Has Yusuf sinned too much for Allah to forgive? Then why did Allah refuse to allow me into paradise? Yusuf asked. Because this is the crux of the matter, is it not? They have both been cursed or blessed with this strange immortality, and there is no reason why either of them should have been. Niccolo startles at Yusuf's words, and he has no answer. Yusuf smiles wryly. I had been a sinner before I came here, though, Niccolo starts. I thought if I would come here and die for God's cause, he would forgive me. But now I think it's not God's cause at all. How can God have wanted all the blood and the suffering? So God didn't forgive me, and instead, he is even angrier at me, and he punished me. There are tears in his ocean eyes, and he's curled up onto himself, smaller than should be possible for a man with Niccolo's broad shoulders. Yusuf feels another pang of compassion. Niccolo, he didn't send you to Jahannam, though, did he? Maybe this is not a punishment. Maybe it's just not your fate to die here. Maybe he has another purpose for you. The ink blue of the sky gives away to red when Niccolo finally replies. You are a good man, Yusuf al-Kaisani, he says. Too good for the likes of me. Yusuf doesn't know how to answer that. Chapter 2. Somehow, their luck seems to hold. They take a few things with them. Clothes, a comb, soap, water skins, the threadbare blanket, a broken silver hairpin they hope to sell for money or food, and Niccolo packs some parchment and a quill, and he's keeping track meticulously. We'll come back later, he mumbles, when Yusuf asks him what he's scribbling down so fastidiously. We'll repay the people to whom all of this belongs, repay them for their help. Even if they weren't here to lend it in person, they still saved us from dying over and over. Yusuf shakes his head, exasperated but somehow fond. There will be no coming back, and there will definitely be no we. Once they reach the coast, they'll split up, find a way home separately. The idea doesn't fill him with the same sense of satisfaction it had when they started their journey from Al-Quds, though. They manage to make it through the next small settlement before they run out of water. They barter for some food, another blanket, and directions to a bigger village a day's walk away. They rest more, trying not to die, spreading their meager rations between villages. People do not take to Niccolo's light skin and clear eyes kindly, but they somehow pick up a few days of work, helping to raise the defense walls of the next village they stop at. With their wages, they get some mending supplies, a whetstone for their blades, a pot to cook over a campfire. Niccolo picks up a bow somewhere, another entry on his growing list, Yusuf notes, and provides some rodent meat. It's enough to see them through the last leg of their journey, and they reach Ascalon without too many mishaps, just as Ramadan is coming to an end. The town is still bristling from the battle with the invaders, but many faithful are at the mosque praising Allah for saving their town. It is teeming with people. Refugees from Al-Quds and military reinforcements alike. Niccolo blends in fairly easily in the cosmopolitan environment. Neither of them has been here before, but all ports are alike, and they only have to follow the shrieks of the seagulls to find the harbor, where they both hope to find a ship. Yusuf wants to continue west to Egypt and onwards home. Niccolo thinks he should try to make it to Damascus or Constantinople, and then make his way back to Genoa. It'll be strange, Yusuf thinks, to stand on the shores of his hometown and wonder if Niccolo is standing across the sea, gazing in Yusuf's direction. So, Yusuf says, we've come this far. I suppose our paths will diverge from here. Niccolo shrugs. Will you leave immediately, then, as soon as you have found a way? Yusuf runs a hand through his beard. It's gotten dirty again from the road, and the idea of setting off again immediately doesn't hold much appeal. Maybe he should rest a bit first. You? he asks instead of answering. I will need to pay for my passage, Nicola mumbles. Maybe I can find work here, on a fishing boat. It will be winter soon, and it might be perilous to cross the sea. Yusuf laughs. Are you afraid of drowning? The sea will spit you out again, and you will wake up to travel on. Still. Nicola stares out to the horizon. Yusuf wants to ask what he sees, but he doesn't. He listens to the shouts of the sailors, the fishmongers peddling their wares, the housewives haggling with them, Muzin calling the faithful to prayer, the seagulls swooping in to take care of the fish heads that are left discarded on the streets. You'll have to speak something besides Greek to get work, Yusuf finally says. I'll manage, Nicola replies, even though his tongue still trips over the few words of Arabic he's picked up on his travels to Al-Quds or from Yusuf since then. Yusuf glances sideways at him. Nicola is still stubbornly staring straight ahead. I could teach you, he mutters, and that gets Nicola's attention. I'll be fine, he says again. You got me this far. You've done more than I could have asked of you. I won't keep you even longer from getting home. You're right about it being winter soon. And I might need some time, too, to get funds for the trip. And with our condition, maybe it's wise to stick together for just a little while longer. Nicola bites his lip. It irks Yusuf suddenly, irrationally. He's caused unspeakable wounds on the other man's body, but now he wants to swipe his thumb on the slight bruise Nicola's teeth are causing, even if it will have healed long before Yusuf can even lift his hand. He doesn't like to think of Nicola wounded in any way. It's stupid, he thinks, angry at himself for being so ridiculous. His anger spills when Nicola doesn't answer, just keeps looking straight ahead, as if he can already see his hometown. You can just say it, he bites. No need to hold back now, filthy Frank. I get it. The idea is too distasteful to you to even dignify it with an answer. You've made it clear enough that you don't want anything to do with me when you ripped out my guts with your bare hands. That was... Nicola's voice raises, and when he faces Yusuf, there's an icy glare in his eyes. But then he stops, takes a deep breath. When he speaks again, his voice is carefully calm, but there's a flood of barely held back emotion underneath. That was different. And nothing you didn't do to me, too. But for what it's worth, I was wrong about everything. I shouldn't have been in Jerusalem, and I shouldn't have killed your brethren. I shouldn't have taken up my sword against anyone, much less you, least of all with God's name on my lips. I beg you for forgiveness, since God will not grant me any. I might as well ask for yours. Yusuf's anger subdues as suddenly as it came. He hadn't expected such a passionate speech from Nicola, and even less for it to end with an apology. Granted, he finally says, swallowing down all his guilt and shame, if you forgive me too. Nicola nods, and they are silent for a while, until the sun sinks into the sea. If you are thinking of staying here for a while, then I think if you wouldn't mind, I would like to stay with you for a little while longer. It's Yusuf's turn to nod. More words aren't spoken as they use their last coins to secure a place at an inn. They will figure out the rest tomorrow. The days pass quietly. They work, they eat, they sleep. Yusuf prays at the mosque. Nicola holds his battered wooden cross and murmurs softly. They find some sort of rhythm. They move out of the inn into some more private lodgings, cheap and subpar, but they've both seen enough hardship to recognize the luxuries they have. Carpeted floors, bedrolls and blankets, a hearth which they stoke high in the chilly evenings, two pots, a pan, a teapot, a few mugs and bowls, silverware. They pool most of their resources without discussion. They share clothes and the small wash basin, as well as the chores. Yusuf mends, sweeps the floors, shakes their bedrolls. Nicola cooks, keeps the firewood stocked, launders when they have no funds for a washerwoman. Yusuf buys a Quran, and Nicola still keeps the writing equipment he took early in their journey. At some point after a few weeks, Yusuf figures out that Nicola is, for lack of a better word, hiding. He found some work as a laborer in the harbor, unloading ships and hauling goods. But he doesn't speak to people, not even the Christians that still remain in the city. He mostly keeps to their home, finding excuses not to join Yusuf on his trips to the market, and when they go to a bathhouse, he sticks close to Yusuf, makes himself as small as possible, and avoids attracting attention at all costs. It takes some patience, but finally Nicola admits it. "I don't speak the language," he says, embarrassment coloring his cheeks. "I can't read it either. You once offered to teach me." "Of course," Yusuf says. It makes sense. Nicola blends in to some extent, can get by with his Greek. This is a port city, after all. There are people from all corners of the earth here. But the battle with the invaders is still fresh on the minds of the people, and hospitality towards strangers is considerably more strained than it used to be. "I'm sorry to ask this of you," Nicola continues stiffly. "You have done more for your enemy than even Jesus would ask, and here I am, still burdening you." "I offered," Yusuf says. "I wouldn't have done so, had I thought you a burden. It was my idea, wasn't it, to stay together until spring, when we can each continue on our path?" Nicola nods. His clear eyes seem like the sea in fall, heavy and stormy. Yusuf doesn't pay him much heed, though. He suddenly feels uneasy at his words, at the idea of Nicola leaving as soon as the days have lengthened enough. But that was the plan all along. That was what they agreed on after two harrowing days of spilling each other's blood near Al-Quds. They would keep each other secret, travel to the coast, and go their separate ways. It was a temporary truce, born out of necessity and desperation, never meant to be everlasting. And if Nicola wants to spend the few months they are still condemned to each other, learning a language he has no use for once he sails back across the sea, then so be it. That's how it starts, at least. After dinner, they light enough candles to see by, and Yusuf teaches. Nicola isn't a quick study. The rounded vowels of his native Ligurian slip through. His broad hands struggle with the quick shapes of Arabic, but he's stubborn, and often Yusuf catches him exercising under his breath. They practice with Yusuf's Quran, and then they discuss what they read. The first few times, it doesn't go well. It ends with Nicola mulishly repeating Bible verses drilled into him in the monastery, and Yusuf storming out in anger. But they learn how to disagree, and how to listen to the beauty in what the other describes, and how to find the similarities between their faces rather than the differences. And soon they are rushing through their work days, through dinner, to start their lessons, even though more often than not nothing is taught, and instead they are just talking. On other days, Nicola teaches Yusuf a bit of Ligurian, and Yusuf repays him with some dirja. It feels familiar, and at the same time not, to share these little snippets of home, to sit close to each other, sharing tea and fruit, and for a moment pretend they are not bitter enemies, to forget the gruesome deaths, to ignore the broadsword and the scimitar standing next to each other against the far wall. Yusuf laughs when Nicola gets frustrated at the ease with which Yusuf picks up Ligurian and curses under his breath when he mispronounces yet another word, calling himself a donkey. Allah knows what he tried to say, Yusuf thinks, wiping the tears of laughter from his face, when Nicola just keeps repeating it, getting more and more irate, the harder Yusuf laughs. "Oh, Nico," he finally manages between pelts of laughter as Nicola crumples up the sheet of parchment in defeat. He stops and looks at Yusuf with his eyes wide. Tonight, in the light of the candles and the fire, they look like the sea on a summer night in Madia, clear and calm with the moonlight reflecting in it. "What?" Yusuf asks when Nicola just stares. You called me Nico," Nicola says slowly. Nobody has ever called me that. Oh. Yusuf falls silent. He doesn't know why he did that, but he likes it. A name for Niccolo just from him. Something else they can share between them. Something good. Something to wash away all the bad they share. But he doesn't say that. I was just thinking Niccolo might be too long. You'll never learn to write that properly in Arabic. What? Niccolo sputters in protest. Yusuf enjoys how his cheeks redden with indignation. It suits Niccolo. I have been able to write it for weeks. Are you sure? Yusuf can't help but continue teasing. He enjoys Niccolo losing his usual calm collectedness. You haven't been writing donkey. Oh, you. Niccolo isn't as quick with words as Yusuf is, and he decides to show him instead, grabbing a pen and a sheet and writing his name beautifully calligraphied and without a mistake. You've been practicing. I can almost read it, Yusuf says, the teasing tone still there. And then quickly, soothingly, it's beautiful, Nico. Niccolo's glare dies as fast as it appeared, his features schooling into something soft and fond when he dips his head and mumbles his thanks. Oh, Yusuf says, studying the rest of the words on the paper. With his new Ligurian, he can decipher it easy enough. His eyes skim over the neat entries. Unnamed outpost, house on the far east, two tunics. Sara, partially ruined building near a big palm tree, a length of cloth. Two arrows. Zeta, house with blue doorpost, a pot, some soap. Niccolo. His voice dies off and Niccolo shrugs bashfully. Yusuf didn't know he kept up with his list of things they took for themselves on their journey all the way up until they reached Ascalon. There are a few dozen entries, some food from an abandoned house here, a few stained clothes there, two or three things of modest monetary value to be sold later. It's not much, and yet it saved them after those miserable first weeks. You know we cannot repay these people, Niccolo. How will we even find them? I know, Niccolo defends himself. I just thought. He ducks his head again, almost as if in shame. I have caused so much pain, Yusuf. I have killed people. I have taken from others what wasn't mine to take. And even before I came here, I... He cuts off abruptly and stares into the dying embers. It is late, but Yusuf doesn't dare move. I was thinking... Niccolo finally continues, his voice hesitant. I was thinking maybe God meant for me to have a chance to redeem myself, to do more good than I have done evil. Nico, Yusuf starts, but he doesn't know how to finish his thought. Niccolo has done evil. Yusuf has seen it firsthand, felt it with every bit of Niccolo's sword. But there were reasons, weren't there? Yusuf has also killed. He has hated people without reason or justification. He has watched with grim satisfaction as the people from Al-Quds drove away their Christian neighbors without compassion. He has never stopped to think about what the Prophet taught his followers. I know I cannot pay back these people, Yusuf, Niccolo says earnestly, but I can pay it forward, tenfold, hundredfold. Maybe we were blessed together for a reason. Maybe we were meant to overcome our differences. Maybe we have been given this strange gift of ours. He holds his hand close to the dancing candle flame. He flinches, retracts it sharply when it burns him, and they both watch the small scorch heal almost immediately. So we can become forces of good. So we can fight for peace. I was fighting for peace in Al-Quds. I had to, because some invaders decided to travel for months so they could kill the people of my faith without reason. Maybe you deserve this curse, Yusuf says, almost by rote, but I certainly didn't. There is no we. He hates himself for his words immediately. Niccolo's eyes dim and he nods sharply. Of course. I apologize. It stays quiet after that until the candles burn down. And Yusuf clears up the papers. He prays quietly, his back to Niccolo, but during the night, when the last glimmers of the fire die and the cold seeps into their small dwelling, they automatically curl up close together, a curse or a blessing, Yusuf wonders, long after Niccolo has fallen asleep, thinking of Niccolo's eyes. Spring is upon them sooner than Yusuf expected. Suddenly they need no fire in the hearth in the evenings, and Niccolo comes home with his skin slightly burned from working in the sun all day. Lent is about to start, Niccolo says one evening, as Yusuf is spooning up the last of the stew Niccolo made. It's really good, with vegetables and some lamb meat, and the bread is freshly baked, with lots of herbs in the crust and a few drops of olive oil to flavor it even more. He hums noncommittally. Niccolo stayed home from work for a few days around the solstice, claiming the birth of Christ. Maybe he'll want to make some sort of change to their routine for Lent or Easter. Yusuf isn't against it. I was thinking, Niccolo continues, if I leave now, I might be home before Easter. There is a ship docked in the harbor that is leaving for Malta soon. From there, it's not far to Genoa. I think I can pay for a passage with my share of our money, and if not, maybe I can work on board. Yusuf puts down his spoon, swallowing his last bite of bread, which suddenly feels dry and hard. If that's what you want to do, he says finally, and goes back to his stew, chewing on it slowly, his back to Niccolo. I thought... Niccolo doesn't finish his sentence, and Yusuf is too proud to ask. There is no time for talking later, with Niccolo painstakingly going through their meager possessions, making sure all clothes are mended, all kitchen utensils in good state, his sword polished. It is warm enough to sleep on opposite sides of the room. Chapter 3 Malta is not that far from Madia either, Yusuf says. Niccolo is supposed to leave early in the morning, passage secured, necessities neatly packed. They are sitting, each on their bedroll, in the sparse evening light. I could sail with you. Oh, Niccolo says. Yeah, Yusuf says, and it stays silent after that. Yusuf wishes he could read Niccolo's mind. I thought you wanted to travel to Egypt. And I thought you wanted to go to Damascus. Another heavy pause. I thought you wanted to get rid of me. Niccolo then mumbles in slow Greek. I changed my plans so I could leave on the first suitable ship. I didn't. You said there was no we, Niccolo interrupts. His voice is calm, his words soft, but there's iron underneath them, unbreakable and cold. Yusuf remembers his words, callous and cruel, and without any truth in them. Is he paying the price for his heartless behavior now? Has he driven Niccolo away by holding on to his anger? And why would that matter? A voice inside him whispers. Niccolo is his enemy, an invader slaughtering innocents. The son of the pirates who raided Madia when Yusuf was but a young man. But Yusuf shuts it up fast. Niccolo is his friend, and he shouldn't have spoken to him in such an unkind manner. He bends his head, uncharacteristically looking for words. I didn't mean. But, Niccolo says, and Yusuf wonders if it's a trick of the light, or if there really is a small crooked smile around Niccolo's lips. I think the captain said there are some free berths aboard ship. There are, the captain confirms the next morning, when he weighs Yusuf's pouch of copper expertly in his hand. Yusuf grins at Niccolo. Niccolo smiles back. Their truce holds, and when they spread their bedrolls next to each other, it feels like it's deeper, stronger, no longer a bond out of necessity, but out of their own volition. They are no longer travel companions for lack of another option, but friends, in spite of all odds. Their journey across the sea is uneventful, and they reach Malta without hardship. Yusuf likes it immediately. He sees people looking like him, and people looking like Niccolo. He hears Arabic and something sounding like Nicola's Ligurian and Latin and Maltese. There are vendors on the market selling food from all coasts of the Mediterranean. Nobody bats an eye at a pale Christian and a bearded Muslim walking the streets together. So, Yusuf says, so. Find an inn? Nicola falls in step easily. Find an inn. Easter comes and goes, and when Nicola makes no plans to travel north, Yusuf decides to bring it up. They are in their room at the inn, a breeze coming in through the open window, bringing the scent of mint and thyme. Nicola ducks his head, pink tinting his cheeks. Yusuf watches in fascination. It's just, Nicola tries. It's just, what do I tell anybody? And where would I go? Back to the monastery? What happens when I pray on my bare knees, on the rough stones, or when the abbot orders me to flagellate for my sins, and my skin shows no marks? Yusuf thinks about that. It makes sense, he supposes. Can't you go back to your family? As he says it, he wonders about it himself. Can he go back home? They don't know yet how their immortality works exactly. Do they age? Do they age at the same speed as everybody else? Or will they stay as they are now, never a gray hair to crop up in Yusuf's beard or a wrinkle to appear on his forehead? His family would keep his secret, he is sure. But what about the villagers? Would it be fair to go back and live among his relatives for a few years, only to be forced to leave again if his immortality becomes too hard to hide? My family wouldn't want to see me, Nicola says, staring at some nondescript point on the wall just past Yusuf's ear, interrupting his thoughts. They cannot ever know about. Yusuf stares at him incredulously. Why not? Nicola is quiet, but there's a war waging within his eyes when he finally turns his face toward Yusuf. There is trust in them, but also shame and fear. It tugs at Yusuf's heart, a small voice insisting that Nicola has suffered much pain and that Yusuf can take it all away. You can trust me, Nico, he whispers softly. I do, Nicola whispers back, his voice trembling, his eyes unguarded, with my life and my death. It sounds strange, but Yusuf understands the sentiment. He may have slain Nicolo dozens of times, but he will not hesitate a second to pick up his scimitar to defend Nicolo, and he knows Nicolo would do the same. He wonders when this happened. Somewhere between Al-Quds and here, their shaky alliance became an unbreakable bond. Will you not tell me what is on your mind, friend? He replies, and Nicolo repeats the word carefully with wonder in his voice, as if it's a spell to ward against all harm. Yes, he then says, I will tell my friend what is on my mind, and I will pray you will still call me that afterwards. Yusuf wants to interject with an assertion that of course he will. What can Nicolo tell him that's worse than what Yusuf has seen with his own eyes? But he stops himself at the haunted look on Nicolo's face. It remains silent for a few minutes, while Nicolo gathers his thoughts. My family would think this gift of ours is just more proof of me being an abomination, he finally says. Yusuf gasps, and Nicolo takes a deep breath before he continues. I told you I've always been a sinner, even back home before I came here. His hand creeps to the laces of his tunic, grasps the cross hidden underneath. There is no redemption for my sins, Yusuf. When my father found out, he forbade me from ever entering his house again. I was only 15, and my only option was the monastery. But the abbot knew about my sins, too, and I was ordered to repent. I tried, Yusuf, I tried. I prayed night after night to God to take away my sin, but he didn't listen. Even God gave up on me. There are tears in Nicola's eyes now, and Yusuf wants to kiss them away. He doesn't do it, though, afraid to move, afraid to even breathe, and scare Nicola away. "What was your sin, Nico?" he asks when Nicola remains silent, making his words soft as a feather, his voice calm despite the turmoil in his soul. Nicola blinks, and when he looks at Yusuf again, his eyes are cloudy and veiled. My father, he saw me. He stops, and when he speaks again, his voice is clipped and emotionless. It's monotone, as if Nicola is reading from an accountancy ledger rather than telling something he lived through. "There was a tinker. He came from across the mountains and stopped by our village every spring. I admired him. He was strong and tall. He had a blonde beard and long hair. I would sit near him whenever he came, watch him work. I thought I was fascinated by his work, but I... And then that spring he smiled at me, and I felt something inside me coil tight, like an arrow just before it's released. He asked me to meet him after sunset, and I did, and he held me close, and the tightness became bigger and hotter in my belly. And then he kissed me, and I knew it was wrong, but it didn't feel wrong." Nicola's staring at the wall again, as if he's seeing a ghost from the past. Yusuf cannot decide if it's a happy memory or if Nicola hates to be reminded of this man he kissed. His face is unreadable, almost stoic, void of feeling. "And I met with him every evening, and he held me and kissed me and called me beautiful, and some things in his own language I didn't understand. And I wanted to leave with him, follow him on the road, but he laughed and said I was too young. Maybe next year, or the year after that. And then, on the last night before he would leave, I went to his wagon again, and I was going to lie with him, even though I knew it is a mortal sin. The Bible says it's wrong. I knew it, but I ignored it all, and I was willing to condemn my soul." Nicola's breath hitches. "But my father had followed me, and he saw us kissing, and..." It remains quiet for a long beat. Yusuf wants to reach out to that small boy, so confused by his first crush. He can guess the rest of the story now, but he waits patiently for Nicola to finish it. "My father beat me for being a sinner, and I was sent to the monastery the next day. But all the penance I did, it was all in vain, and I..." Nicola's voice breaks. "I kept thinking about him, and that tightness would never go away." He falls quiet, and then he starts again vehemently. "So you see now why I needed to come here. It was the only way for me to earn God's forgiveness. The Pope promised all sins would be washed away. The priests all kept saying our souls would be saved. But it was a lie. It was all a lie. And God didn't want us to do what we did. And now I am beyond redemption, Yusuf. Can't you see? You shouldn't let me stay with you. You shouldn't be my friend." He looks at Yusuf now, and his eyes are bottomless pools, welling with grief and self-hatred. And Yusuf is helpless against it, helpless to do anything but pull Nicola into his arms. He feels the tears in his own eyes now, full of sorrow for the lonely boy Nicola must have been and for the broken man he had become. "Oh, my Nico," he whispers, letting the tears fall freely. "Nico, listen to me. You are not beyond redemption. You are a good man, and Allah spared you because there is more good for you to do." Nicola stares up at him, his eyes huge and wet. He lifts his hand to touch Yusuf's damp face, buries his fingers in Yusuf's beard for a brief moment. Yusuf is so close he could easily press a kiss on Nicola's head, and before he can question his urges, he does so. Don't you hate me?" Nicola asks, leaning into Yusuf's touch like a starved man. "No," Yusuf answers truthfully. Maybe I did, at first, when we left Al-Quds, but not anymore, Nico. You are kind, and you said it yourself. You want to do good, 100-fold of what you received. I can never do that, Nicola whispers. I could never even repay the kindness you alone have blessed me with, let alone 100-fold of it. I didn't deserve any of it. Hush, Yusuf says, as he presses another kiss on Niccolo's temple, his jaw. You do. You deserve all and more. Your sins are not big enough to not deserve love, Nico. Niccolo doesn't reply, but the anguish leaves his eyes, and in its wake comes that strange look of wonder. Yusuf, he whispers, and he tilts his head up in a clear question. And Yusuf answers it, joyfully and without trepidation. They find the small house a few days later. It's sturdy and strong with white walls, an orange tree providing shade, and wildflowers overgrowing the path. It belongs to an old lady who's looking to let it as she goes to live with her daughter to help take care of her grandchildren. Yusuf thinks he might save up enough to buy it one day, maybe. For now, though, it's enough to have a place they can call home for the next few years while they figure everything else out. They don't need much time to make it theirs. Their crockery on the shelves near the fireplace, their clothes in the big cabinet, their swords next to the door, Yusuf's Quran, and the Bible Nicola bought in Medina on the windowsill, their blankets on the bed. Yusuf is standing in the middle of the room when Nicola steps through the door. He's wearing a small smile, and Yusuf wants to kiss him. His love is not prone to big shows of emotions, but Yusuf doesn't mind. He knows enough by now to be able to read those luminous eyes, and he can tell a weight has been lifted from Nicola since the night they first kissed. What's that? He asks, gesturing to Nicola's hands. Nicola smiles shyly. I picked some flowers, he says timidly. They are a gift for you. Oh, Yusuf says in surprise as he takes them from Nicola. It's not much, Nicola hastens to add, but they are beautiful, like you. He blushes fervently, and Yusuf wants to run his tongue over the pink. And they only blossom when the sun shines, and I... You are my sunshine, Yusuf. Yusuf thinks the simple line is more beautiful than all of the love poetry he read back home, and he wants to sit down and write a reply for Nicola. For now, though, the sketch he made this morning will have to do, and he hands it to Nicola after putting his flowers in a small jug. Nicola stares at his own sleeping form, and when he looks back up at Yusuf, that look of wonder is back in his eyes. He carefully folds the sheet again and puts it between the pages of his Bible. Yusuf thinks he will do the same with the flowers when they start to wilt, press them in his Quran, keep Nicola's first gift saved forever. Nico, he says slowly, his voice dipping low. He wonders if the naked hunger he's feeling is visible on his face. He gets an answer when Nicola looks up and his eyes go dark with desire. Yusuf reaches a hand out to Nicola, and without hesitation, Nicola takes it. It takes only a few steps to the bed, and they lie down carefully facing each other. I have never, Nicola starts to say nervously, but Yusuf hushes him with a soft finger on his lips. Ya Amar, he whispers, overwhelmed, and he shakes his head when Nicola wants to ask what it means. Tesoro, Nicola whispers back against Yusuf's finger. Yusuf hasn't heard the word before, but that's not important right now. He'll learn its meaning later. They have a lifetime to teach each other. For now, he just basks in the emotion Nicola infuses into the syllables. He lifts his hand to slide it into Nicolo's hair. Heati. Amore. Nicolo's breath caresses his lips right before Yusuf kisses him. Already their kiss feels familiar, safe, and warm, and yet it thrills Yusuf to his core. It feels like home, like the sea which keeps crashing upon shore over and over again, lovers losing themselves in each other for eternity. "Let me show you," he says, when they finally come up for breath. "Let me take care of you." His fingers brush the delicate skin of Niccolo's throat, past the wooden cross, and he revels when Niccolo gasps, and he can feel his lover's pulse spike under his hand. He dips lower still into Niccolo's loose tunic, and he places his hand flat where he can feel Niccolo's heartbeat best. Niccolo is lying very still, his eyes wide, his breathing labored. Yusuf's mouth tries to follow the same path, but Niccolo's tunic doesn't allow him that much. "Sit up, Ya Amar," he murmurs. And when Niccolo complies, he slowly lifts the garment. Niccolo's blush deepens, but he doesn't object and lets Yusuf take it off. Yusuf drinks in the sight of his broad shoulders, his skin rippling over the muscles he got from all the manual work in Ascalon. He remembers slashing this chest with his scimitar, and he follows the imaginary line down with one fingertip. Niccolo shivers, a small moan escaping his lips, and then bites down on the bottom one to keep silent. "Nico." Yusuf holds Nicolo's face between his hands, forces him to look at him. "Don't hide. Don't hold back. We are in this together. You are allowed to touch me, to tell me what you want." "But what if..." Niccolo bites his lip again, and Yusuf carefully swipes at it with his thumb, the way he had wanted to do so long ago. "What if I do it wrong?" "There is no right or wrong," Yusuf says tenderly. "There are 1,000 ways we can enjoy each other, my Nico, and we have time to explore them all, if you like." Niccolo nods eagerly, and then he reaches for Yusuf with shaking hands. Will you let me take your clothes off?" he asks, and his voice quivers. Yusuf nods, and Niccolo reaches for him. It feels like it takes him ages, but finally he's got Yusuf in only a thin loincloth. He is touching Yusuf carefully, tenderly, first with his fingertips, then with the palms of his large hands, then, Allah be merciful, with his mouth. Yusuf tries to be patient, to let Niccolo explore, but his breathing is ragged and he is painfully hard by the time Niccolo stops his journey just above where Yusuf wants him most. Niccolo looks up at him, eyes dark, and Yusuf swears under his breath. "Yusuf?" Niccolo asks uncertainly. "Did I do something?" "Remember," Yusuf grits out, "no right or wrong. We will figure out how we can give each other the most pleasure, but right now you are making it hard for me to think." "Oh, is that..." "Yes, Nico," Yusuf says, pulling Niccolo up. "That's very good." Their kiss is deep and needy, tasting each other hungrily. Yusuf rolls them over so Niccolo is lying on his back, bracketing him with his arms and knees. He rolls his hips and he groans when he can feel Niccolo is hard too. "Have you touched yourself, Hayati?" he whispers. Niccolo looks up at him with glassy eyes. In the monastery, they said it is a sin." Yusuf presses down again. "Does this feel like a sin to you now?" "No," Niccolo says breathlessly. "No, Yusuf, please." "Yes," Yusuf says lowly, and it sounds like a vow. "Everything you want." Niccolo bucks his hips up against Yusuf, and Yusuf thinks he'd better slow them down before he loses control. He moves to lie on his side next to Niccolo, silencing the latter's protests with another kiss. He pushes his hand down Niccolo's braise, and he swallows thickly when he feels how slippery with pre-cum Niccolo is already. "Oh, Santa Maria, Madre de Dio," Niccolo whispers brokenly when Yusuf makes a fist around his cock, uncaring about the blasphemy. "Yusuf!" "I can do this for you," Yusuf says, his lips against Niccolo's shoulder, slowly pumping Niccolo's cock. "But there are other ways." Niccolo turns his head to stare at him, and Yusuf's heart feels suddenly too big for his chest. "What do you mean?" Niccolo stutters, his eyes falling closed, when Yusuf twists his hand around Niccolo's head. "Let me show you," Yusuf whispers sultrily. He doesn't wait for a response, just carefully lowers Niccolo's small clothes down as he sucks a row of bruises on his chest, his stomach. Nicola's cock is dripping when Yusuf reaches his destination. There is a moment of confusion about the bit of skin Yusuf has never encountered before, but Nicola moans when Yusuf carefully touches it. It moves easily out of the way, and then Yusuf carefully licks up the bead of pre-cum. Nicola arches up off the bed with a hoarse scream, and Yusuf's hands grip his hips as he murmurs soothingly, "It's okay, Nico. It's okay." And then he closes his lips around Nicola, slides down easily as far as he can, and hollows his cheeks. It takes a few seconds, no more, before Nicola spills into Yusuf's mouth with a ragged shout. Yusuf slowly works him through it, and then he crawls his way up Nicola's body with a satisfied grin, his hand loosely cupping Nicola. Nicola is trembling as the aftermath of his orgasm racks through him, panting, his eyes hooded as he tries to focus on Yusuf. "Want to do that too," he slurs, and Yusuf laughs. "Of course, Hayati," he says, kissing Nicola again. Belatedly, he thinks maybe he should have asked, considering what he just swallowed, but Nicola licks into his mouth with abandon, so Yusuf decides Nicola probably doesn't mind. He drags his hand up, and he feels Nicola's cock stir again under his fingertips. It's been years since Yusuf himself achieved that, so soon after having his thirst slaked, but he supposes Nicola is new to all of this. It does, however, give him another idea. "Nico," he murmurs. "Nico, there's something else, some other way you could bring me pleasure right now." "Yes," Nicola says, "teach me." Yusuf almost laughs at his eagerness, but then his need makes itself known and Yusuf groans. He needs the little bottle of oil they bought on the market a few days ago, and he stumbles out of the bed. "Where are you?" Nicola starts, alarmed, but Yusuf shushes him with a quick, hard kiss. "Touch yourself," he says, as he crosses the small room towards the pantry shelf. "Make a fist around your cock, Nico, and move it up and down the way I did. Make yourself feel good." Nicola obeys wordlessly, his eyes never leaving Yusuf. Yusuf finds what he needs in mere seconds, and he hurries back to kneel next to Nicola. He coats two fingers, and then he slowly circles his rim. He hears Nicola swallow back a curse or a moan. He cannot be sure, but it doesn't matter when Nicola's other hand finds Yusuf's cock and starts pumping him slowly. "Tighter, Nico, please," he moans. And when Nicola wants to say something, he adds, "You won't hurt me. Please, Nicola." Nicola licks his lip when he does, as he's asked, and Yusuf chooses that exact moment to breach himself with one slick finger. Nicola's eyes dart from his own hand on Yusuf's cock to Yusuf's hand, and it makes Yusuf feel heady, lightheaded. He's going a bit too fast, entering a second finger before he's completely ready for it, but he doesn't care. They heal, and even if they didn't, he wants Nicola inside now. He scissors his fingers a few times, shuddering when he brushes that sensitive spot inside, and suddenly Nicola grabs the oil and pours some over his hand. "Let me," he says. And Yusuf swears he nearly comes at the needy, greedy look in his blue eyes. He nods eagerly, pulling his fingers out, and he cannot bite back a shout when Nicola slowly replaces them with his own. He doesn't know what to chase more, Nicola's fist or his fingers, so he sits still as he can for as long as he can manage, which is not long at all. "Nico," he moans. "Nico, please, I want you inside of me. I want your cock inside of me," he clarifies, pouring the leftover oil over him when Nicola doesn't move fast enough. "Take out your fingers, please." As soon as Nicola does so, Yusuf positions himself, hovering over Nicola's cock, carefully lowering himself onto it. Nicola's mouth opens to a silent scream. "Yusuf," he manages. "Yusuf, you... Oh, Yusuf, Yusuf." His hips move slightly and Yusuf feels stars explode inside of him. "Yusuf, so tight, so... Hold still, Nico. Wait until I've taken all of you." Nicola trembles. Sweat is running in small rivulets off his forehead, and Yusuf bends, not without difficulty, to lick up a salty drop. Finally, he manages to sink down completely on Nicola's cock, shivering with the effort. Nicola swears under his breath, and his grip on Yusuf's cock becomes almost painful. Yusuf feels his balls tighten, and he clenches around Nicola involuntarily. "Yusuf," Nicola warns. "Yusuf, I... "Do it," Yusuf orders brusquely. "Do it, Nico, please, I..." He comes, spilling hot and white over Nicola's hand, and then he swears he could die when Nicola lifts his hand to his mouth and his tongue darts out to taste Yusuf's cum. He clenches again hard, and Nicola's hand falls gracelessly on the bed as he surrenders to another orgasm. It takes Yusuf a long time to find the strength to get up and tear a strip of cloth to dampen so he can clean Nicola and himself. Their blankets are filthy, but the nights are warm enough to not need them, especially when Yusuf turns on his side and Nicola curls around him. "I think," Nicola says slowly, "I was wrong before. God did not deny me entry to heaven. He sent me to you, so I could find something endlessly more heavenly than I could ever dare dream of right here in your arms." Yusuf hums, sleepy and sated. "What a blessing we have received, to be able to kiss each other every day until the end of time." It's taken them a long road, he thinks, to get here, but that doesn't matter anymore. The only thing that matters is that they arrived. The end.